Hi, my name's William Henderson.
And I'm B. McGraw.
And this is the Unjerked podcast. So we're continuing with the previous episode about crime. So if you can kind of go back and listen to that first, that'd definitely be recommended. So our podcast is basically affiliated with B. McGraw's website.
The Journal of Astrological, Big Data Ecology, or JABDI.com.
So, unlike the website, instead of making for fake journal articles, we're going to look at real journal articles to talk about specific topics and what the reality is behind them, not the Reddit version of what's going on. So, we'll pick off where we left off last episode. When it comes to urban environment, basically, there's this study from the Journal of Urban Economics. By Tate Twinnum, which says commercial uses, and I think we talked about this same paper or maybe a similar one during the housing episode, but it says commercial uses lead to more street crime, but this effect is offset by population density, so dense mixed-use areas are safer than typical residential areas. And then it says much of the commercial effect is driven by liquor stores and late-hour bars. So the
You
result
didn't
is
mention that.
Yeah, so high density mixed use areas are safe. There's another article in the Journal of Research in Crime and Delinquency by Browning, Byron, and Peterson. And it says, using data from Columbus, Ohio, it says there's a curve for linear relationship between commercial and residential density in both homicide and aggravated assault. So at low levels, increasing density leads to more homicide and assault, but then once you reach a certain threshold, continuing to increase density reduces both outcomes. So there's actually super low density and super high density both have lower rates, whereas like the middle, when it comes to density, has higher rates when it comes to crime. So the implication here is that like very, very high density sort of downtown areas are safer, and also rural areas are safer. So you're less likely to be murdered, living on the farm, for example. But it's in that in-between area where it's like medium density where you see the most crime, interestingly enough.
I believe that.
So that's all very interesting. Also, drug and alcohol availability, we already talked about that. So basically, and going off of the previous, I talked about Steven Pinker's book, Better Angels of Our Nature. And according to him, a lot of like in the old days, like things were just violent in general. There was just a lot of, like violence was just ubiquitous. And it seems like one of the biggest motivations for violence was just honor, basically. The feeling of honor is a word that can mean a lot of things, but in this context, it basically means, you have your reputation or your sense of self, and an honor culture is where someone can take that away from you by insulting you, essentially. And the way you regain it is basically by, harming the other person, getting revenge, essentially. And that seems to be a massive motivator for a lot of violent crimes. Much more so than like just taking, it seems like just taking something, like, oh, I want to steal something. That seems to not be like the biggest motivator for violent crimes. It's usually some sort of like someone insulted you, or someone, a separate gang, like intruded on your territory and disrespected you. Or when it comes to like violence against a partner, a lot of it is like perceived slights. And, I'm not justifying any of this, but I'm saying like that is what you see a lot. And one theory that I believe was in that book is that a lot of the violence you see in very, very low income communities is because essentially there's no in those communities, the police are not considered legitimate because of issues that we all know about. And so there's a definition saying that, like, essentially, like, what is a government? What is a state? And the most simple definition is that the state is basically whoever has the monopoly on violence in an area. And so, in most of the country, like, the government has a monopoly on violence. If you're not part of the government and you're committing violence outside of, you know, the capacity of your official function, then you're, you know, that's almost always a crime, unless you're like, you know, in a like MMA match or a boxing match or, you know, like stuff like that. But like,
yeah,
any other context, or you're in high school and you're in a fist fight or whatever. But like, if you're an adult and you just like start punching someone, like you're going to, like, that's a crime. But when you think about like, okay, like what makes the government, it's not always voting, because in democratic countries, it is elections, but there's a lot of countries that don't have elections. And in both cases, ultimately it's who has the monopoly on violence. And, you know, like, even if it's a country like in Northern Europe where the government doesn't really, most police don't have guns, whatever, like at the end of the day, like the end result, if you don't comply with a certain law, is that you'll get dragged out by a bunch of people with guns. You know, let's say you just stop paying your taxes and you refuse to leave your house. Eventually a bunch of cops with guns are going to come in and take you to like a courtroom. So.
Yeah, that's the big counter argument when people start going too far down the libertarian rabbit hole, is if you get rid of government and institutions just because why would we need them? We can take care of ourselves. Inevitably, some sort of violence monopoly will come about from somewhere.
Well, you have, so we're, so the areas with the most violence are where the monopoly does not exist, because there's people vying to gain that monopoly. So a lot of places where there's civil wars, or there's a lot of gang violence, that's where there's no clear monopoly, where no side has the complete control over violence. And I agree with you when it comes to like the libertarian, I'm not a libertarian. I respect certain libertarian arguments, but that's the big thing where I'm like, okay, like, the reality is if the state goes away, and not all libertarians want the state to go away, but if that's like the argument you're making, you know, you're not going to just be running your homestead, having a good time. Like, whoever is like the biggest thug around is going to be in charge.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. I mean, it's going to happen eventually. Someone's be like, oh, well, there's a power vacuum, so it looks like I'm going to be that power.
Yeah, so it's going to be, you know, some sort of...
There's a lot of good, there's still a lot of good behind libertarianism. Like, if you are able to shake it where you have a state with libertarian freedom-like principles, then that's a really good thing, having some sort of authoritarian come up from somewhere. Or you get conquered.
But I think the reason I kind of went off on this tangent is to say, so in a lot of very, very impoverished neighborhoods, that monopoly does not exist because people don't respect the police because of historical reasons. And so what happens is, like, if you are wronged in some way, you can't go to the cops because that's considered, you know, that's just a thing you don't do and it's looked down upon. And so what you do is you just vigilante justice, basically. And that's where a lot of gang violence, a lot of that is, and that's essentially the mechanism that happens. And so that's another kind of big reason why you see a lot of violence in sort of disadvantaged communities. So I think essentially when you look at like, where does crime happen the most? It's where you have a lot of young men who basically feel like they don't have skin in the game. They're not part of the system. They have nothing to lose. And, you know, that's where crime happens, you know? So I think, I'm seeing some of your joke answers.
Yeah. You can read some of them.
So, I mean, do you want to read any of them?
We could read them, the ones I've seen online. Well, pull back up, because I can't.
Okay. Yeah.
One answer to why crime exists is committing illegal actions. Kind of the tautology reason.
Uh-huh.
Third reason, I just wanted to get high. Fourth reason, rules. You can't commit crime if there are no rules. Another answer is too many GTA players, you know, get rid of Grand Theft Auto the game. It's going to be crazy. There's a new one coming out.
Let's talk about actual solutions to crime rates. How do we actually reduce crime? Do you want to talk about the non-solutions first or the solutions first?
Let's talk about the non-solutions, then talk about the solutions. Non-solutions time.
So it seems like incredibly draconian, basically like the sort of we'll throw you under the jail type policies don't really work. So there's a wide variety of these, but there's obviously there's mandatory minimums, there's like three strike laws, there's all these sort of policies that are basically like you will be locked up forever if you commit. I mean, obviously if you're a serial killer, like you probably should go to prison for the rest of your life. But if you're talking like a lot of less severe crimes, these like incredibly draconian policies don't seem to have the intended effect. So there's this
I feel like I haven't heard that word since
2020. Loyola University of Chicago Law Journal, there's this article
draconian by Arne Cassidy
mentioning not only are mandatory sentences in most instances inefficacious and unduly coercive, but they allow for an arbitrary and discriminatory application that is essentially unreviewable by courts. There's this article in Criminology and Public Policy by Gerloff and Nagin, basically saying, you know, it's reasonably clear that lengthy prison sentences, particularly in the form of mandatory minimum type statutes, such as California's three strikes laws, are difficult to justify on a deterrence-based crime prevention basis. So it seems like they just don't have the intended effect. And furthermore, they're very expensive because, you know, the prison population's exploded under these laws. And when you actually look at, this isn't a prison episode, but when you look at the prison population in the US, it is absolutely massive. I think it's like 1/4 of all prisoners on the planet are in American prisons and jails.
It's freaking wild. Yeah.
Like even compared to, and not in relative terms, but in absolute terms, we are like the biggest jailer of people, and much higher than even a lot of dictatorships. So it seems like, okay, like it's not really having an intended effect. And this is what you hear, I suppose it's kind of the right wing argument is like, you know, we'll just like end you, you know, and it seems like it's not working. When it comes to the death penalty, so the Department of Justice did sort of this, I guess like a meta study, and essentially it was inconclusive. They're like, we don't know, we can't tell if the death penalty has a deterrent effect or not. There's some research that says it doesn't. There's some that says it's hard to tell. This meta study says inconclusive. And then when it comes to another sort of common scapegoat is like, do immigrants commit crimes? Obviously, some immigrants commit crimes. But when you look at, you know, there's this paper, this is a working paper for the National Bureau of Economic Research, but Kristen Butcher and Ann Peel basically look at incarceration rates. And it seems like immigrants commit, on average, fewer crimes than citizens do. Obviously, there are immigrants who commit crimes, and this is specifically the U.S. And obviously, like there should be serious consideration given towards deporting people who commit crimes, who are like don't have status to be here in the first place, etc. But when you really look at the aggregate, they're not disproportionate committers of crimes. It's the other way around. And I think the reason why is like a lot of people who are, you know, here illegally, like they want to stay under the radar and make money and send it back.
Yep.
And they just want to stay out of trouble and just stay under the radar. So I just think like, yes, there are immigrants who commit crimes, but like immigration is not a driving factor behind crime rates. So, okay, so those are not solutions. What are solutions? So it seems like, and this is sort of the flip side to the sort of harsh punishments. One law enforcement technique that does reduce crime, so this is from the Department of Justice, but it seems like law enforcement is most effective when it reacts to offenders' conduct by seeking close societal supervision of offenders. You know, and there's another article that looks at, and this is also from the Department of Justice, and it's looking at how to reduce crime in high hotspot areas. And essentially, the argument is that basically being around proactive policing, I guess, being around and being a presence and basically increasing the chance of, like, if you do commit a crime, increasing the chance of being caught is much more of a deterrence than the actual severity. And so I guess the argument here is, like, having a 90% chance of going to prison for 10 years is a much bigger deterrent than, like, a 10% chance of going to prison for 30 years.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I mean, it's like a saturation campaign on a highway. If you see a bunch of cops out, you're way less likely to speed.
Right. So it seems like, you know, basically the high probability of getting caught is a big deterrent, much more than the actual, if you do get caught going to prison for decades and decades and decades, that's much less so. So, and, you know, this makes sense because, like, going through the legal system, even because, like, I got called to jury duty once a couple years ago, I ended up not doing anything because, you know, I ended up not being part of the jury, but just, like, having to spend 3 hours of your like Tuesday or whatever sitting there waiting, it's just like, oh man, this sucks. Like, there's just a lot of other things I'd rather be doing. So I think, like, even you know, it's just knowing for sure if I do this thing, I'm probably going to get caught is a much bigger deterrence than, like, I'm probably not going to get caught, but if I do, it's going to be the end of everything. Because if those are the calculations, a lot of people are really cocky and they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to get caught. Like, you know, other people might get caught, but I'm not. But if the odds are, like, hey, like, you will get caught, that seems to really deter people. And so in Japan, there's an entire system of policing where there's, like, little police boxes in every neighborhood, basically, where there's a cop who's, like, the neighborhood beat cop who just kind of hangs out there. And people, like, go to the cop to, like, ask, you know, look for, like, items that they lost or, like, ask for directions. It's, like, a very, you know, they're not, you know, they're just kind of like the neighborhood cop, and they're everywhere. And it's almost like, imagine if there's a strip mall and there's just, like, you know, there's, like, the dentist, and then there's, like, a liquor store, and then, like, next to that is, like, the local police present, the police office or whatever. So that seems to really work. After school programs, I mean, this sounds a little cheesy, but there's, you know, basically looking at after school programs specifically for youth issues. And, you know, they seem to help. And then we look at improving economic outcomes. So there's this paper, The Effect of Welfare Programs on Criminal Behavior, a Theoretical and Empirical Analysis. And it says, there's a theoretical prediction that welfare payments will reduce time allocated to illegal activities. And then it says, it is found that cash or in-kind welfare programs have a negative and often significant effect on property crime. So welfare programs actually reduce crime quite a bit. Drug abuse treatment, does that work? I think there's this article in the Drug and Alcohol Dependence is the name of this journal, but it basically says with treatment, statistically significant reductions in the mean number of convicted offenses were also found between treatment intake and a 5-year follow-up. Reduction in convictions were found for acquisitive drug selling and violent crimes. And in the Journal of Criminal Effectiveness of Drug Treatment, it says, shows that it is reducing crime in a population of drug drug addicted offenders significantly less likely to recidivate than were both untreated drug court subjects and control subjects. So, you know, it sounds almost too good to be true, but it seems like just giving support programs to people in bad situations helps a ton. You know, welfare programs, after school programs, drug counseling programs seem to really help a ton. And then, like I mentioned before, the law enforcement angle is just increase the chance of getting caught, not, you know, throw the book at the person. Obviously, you still, in my opinion, if you commit a violent crime, you should probably go to prison. This is my own opinion. If it's some sort of less serious crime, like if you commit larceny, if you steal, you know, if you steal someone's wallet or something, like maybe community service would be a better solution.
Yeah. Community service and fines would be way better than going to prison and institutionalizing people.
Well, I just think spending 50 hours, like, you know, planting flowers in, like, you know, the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Park. You know, it's not great, like, having to spend hours and hours doing something that is, like, not part of your daily plan. It's kind of sucks. And so, like, if you had to spend, like, several weekends just, like, planting flowers and, like, cleaning up trash, I feel like for minor crimes, that's probably a better punishment than throwing someone in prison for even, like, a week, you know? Because, like, once you're in the system, like, that creates a whole entire, like, because then you need, like,
also,
protection.
Yeah, also throwing people in prison for years and not weeks or months, like, even the prison sentences there are, like, at least reduce those.
Well, I mean, it's context, like
what's the, like, point?
If you're a serial killer or something, like,
yeah, I think there's extreme, like, violent cases, yeah.
Yeah. I think the solution of, like, throw someone in prison for decades and decades and decades for a nonviolent offense doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And it does make sense if it was a very violent crime, but if it was not violent, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Week-long prison sentences, I'm like, man, you might as well just, like, have them do community service, you know, like,
yeah,
because like, if you're thrown into the prison sentence, like, or prison system, like, that can affect, you know, you might, do you get to keep your job if you're, like, in prison for a month, right? So, like, maybe you lose your job.
That's true.
And then you get involved in, like, you know, there's people in prison who committed worse crimes and you get involved in that whole scene. So that's kind of, you know, basically, like, more social programs, and then also, like, higher frequency of, like, increase the chance of getting arrested if you do commit a crime. Seems to be the solution. And is that more or less, like, what you expected, or, like, what do you think?
That's kind of my opinion too, and I think that's a lot of people's opinion. Is there any research on, like, the difference between longer prison sentences or just community service is as much of a deterrence as prison sentences?
Well, I didn't look into it. I think, so when it comes to, like, committing crimes in general, it seems like incredibly harsh punishments don't seem to have a deterrent effect. It's more, like I said before, it's more about, like, the chance of getting caught and going through getting convicted.
Yeah.
Even if it's, like, a moderate punishment, seems to be a bigger deterrent. And then when it comes to petty crimes, I haven't researched this, but I just imagine, like, what is the benefit of throwing someone in prison for a month for committing larceny? Like, it seems much better to just do some sort of, you know, community service for, even if it's, you know, for a significant amount of time, like 100 hours, or I don't know what the hours are and, you know, what is good and what is enough, but that seems to make the most sense to me. I think it's a very, crime is a very politically divisive topic. It's very easy. I think on the right, it's often used to say, well, you know, it's very popular to say, like, well, we need to crack down on people, and just, like, the throw the book at them is, like, a very popular And then I think on the left, you see the opposite extreme where, where it's like,
why do we even have cops in the first place?
Or even like, hey, like if someone commits a petty crime, like don't even arrest them. Like don't even like if it's like, oh, yeah, we got carjacked, or like not carjacked, but like if someone broke into your car, like, well, we're not going to even investigate it, or we're like, because that's the opposite of,
yeah,
like I said before, crime goes down if the chance of getting arrested goes up, or the chance of like, or just like cops being around. So to just say like, oh, well, we're not going to like even investigate nonviolent crimes, that doesn't fix the problem either.
No. So it's all, and that's the big thing people criticize about the West Coast is a lot of them are apparently practically decriminalized because they don't even investigate. Yeah, that happened to one of my friends that went out to San Francisco, got his rental car broken into, like, immediately, just, like, parked into an In-N-Out, went in, came back, lost all of his luggage. It totally broke him because he was just like, yeah, the cops didn't even bother investigating. They're just like, yeah, that happens.
Yeah, because, like, that's not what I'm advocating at all. Like, the research, like, impunity is not helpful. You know, like maybe if they're breaking into cars, you should, you know, heavily investigate it. And then maybe the punishment should be like, you know, 3 months of like community service weekends. Cause that's a pretty crappy punishment. It's like, you don't have any free weekends for like 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hate that.
Yeah.
Especially like how much money do you get off of, you know, selling people's luggage or whatever you find, and their CDs they don't listen to anymore in the car.
Yeah. And then the big sort of concern about the huge like shoplifting spree, there's a podcast I listened to. I'm going to find the source on this, but it seems like that is entirely fictional. Like there's out like so
oh, shoplifting I hear people talk about how like it'll be like a flash mob, except the flash mob is just stealing stuff from block stores.
Yeah. And then, so I think in New York it's going up, but like outside of that, it's not going up. Like that seems to be
the news I mostly hear about for that is like Oregon and LA and San Francisco and those sorts of West Coast locations. Like I heard like a bunch of block stores and chain stores we can't be profitable in these cities anymore.
So there was an article. So there's an investigative podcast. I'll link to it, but they actually looked at like, okay, where's that data from? And a lot of these people quoted congressional testimony from this one guy. And then that guy quoted the research he quoted was like the same organization that later quoted him. And the data he was quoting was like totally unrelated to what he was talking about. So it was basically this like made up number that came from nowhere, and it just like somehow entered the public record. So like apparently this like huge shoplifting wave is like not even a real thing.
Oh really?
Not saying shoplifting doesn't happen, but the story that it's increasing dramatically in 2023/4 seems to not be a thing.
Well, I think the argument isn't that it's increasing that year, but that it's increasing in places where there's more impunity, like people can get away with it.
That probably happens. I'm assuming. And then when it comes to, you know, should cops exist or not, that's an entirely different episode. My opinion is like, of course, yes, there should be police reform, but I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I think we talked about this at the beginning that we're probably going to have to do another episode on police reform because, you know, there are lots of problems, but, you know, I don't know what you do without them.
I just can't imagine. It just quickly reaches a point of impracticability. So it's like, okay, like, you know, maybe I'm arguing a straw man. But people who say there shouldn't be any police at all, it's like, okay, who investigates murders? Who, if you're, you know, someone's breaking into your house, who do you call? Like, it just reaches a point quickly where it just doesn't make sense. So,
yeah. And I think those people, an argument would be like, Yeah, but in those cases, like, the crime already happened. What did the cop do to stop it?
Well, that doesn't look at the deterrent effect. It just looks like, in that specific situation, did the cop stop it or not? And, you know, maybe it takes X number of minutes for them to show up, so maybe it doesn't work in that case. But I mean, the question is, if criminals knew there is no law enforcement at all, would that change, would that increase their likelihood of trying to break into houses? Seems pretty obvious to me. You know, maybe this is, maybe we're arguing against, like, the smallest fringe who thinks, like, there should be no cops at all. But I don't know.
It's hard to tell how big that fringe is. Some people do believe that. I don't think too many people believe it.
And then vigilantism, that's a whole different topic. I think the danger with sort of vigilante justice is that, you know, due process exists for a reason. There's an entire system of, you know, figuring out what the evidence is and figuring out what really happened. And sometimes people get off on technicalities, but the reality is, like, when you have a system where people do vigilante justice, it's so easy to fall into a space where, you know, a rumor spreads. They're like, I heard so-and-so did this. And then everyone shows up and, like, lynches someone. And then it turns out, like, oh, that person, like, didn't do anything. I mean, that's what happens in those systems, is that, you know, and a lot of people would use that in those systems. They'll just try to settle scores by, like, just making up rumors. It's like, oh, so-and-so, you know, assaulted somebody. And then everyone in town shows up and, like, kills the person. And then turns out, like, none of that ever happened. So I think vigilante justice is horrible.
One of the subreddits I went on, where someone asked what prevents crime, the number one comment was Batman. No surprise there. The other thing that kind of goes with vigilantism is a lot of people will argue that if everyone was armed with a firearm, then crime would go down, because now the deterrence is if everyone can defend themselves or deter violent crime or even just normal crime.
I didn't get to research that. I feel like guns could be an entirely new episode. I don't even know if I want to. I don't even know if we should go there.
Just for this episode? That is something that a lot of people do argue that. Like, oh, yeah, well, you're not going to break into a house if you know that that person is well-armed.
Right.
You know, the whole Florida stand your ground law. You know, like, oh, I'm not going in there. That's too dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to look into that, so I'm not sure. And then...
Yeah, this might be its own episode. I'm just thinking of all the stuff we would talk about.
Yeah. So... Homelessness and crime. So do homeless people commit crimes? So they did a study. So there's this study by these professors from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. And, you know, do they commit more crimes? I mean, the crimes they do commit are, you know, homelessness is linked to criminal behavior through homeless status offenses. So things like vagrancy laws and other sort of relatively petty crimes, right? Vagrancy, trespassing, etc. But there doesn't seem to be a correlation with, like, more serious crimes like assault and murder and robbery and things like that. And in fact, homeless people are much more likely to be victims of crimes. You know, like, you hear a lot about stories of, like, some person who started, like, attacking homeless people. And I know there's that one situation you mentioned where you saw that homeless guy with, like, the sledgehammer downtown.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he did anything. He was just being a threat.
Yeah, so, like, yes, like, obviously there are scenarios where certain there's stories in New York where, like, some homeless dude, like, push someone in front of a train or like, you know, attack somebody or something. So, like, those stories happen. But when you look at the overall data, like, most of those serious crimes, like, homeless people don't commit at a higher rate, and they're more likely to be victims of those crimes. So it seems like homelessness is you know, when it comes to like the criminal aspect of it, it's a lot more, more of like a nuisance issue. Like, oh, this person's like in front of my business and,
yeah,
and, you know, they're scaring people off, you know, not saying that's not a legitimate concern, but it doesn't seem like serious violent crimes are a huge result of that. When it comes to mental illness and crime, we did talk about personality disorders. But this paper from North Carolina State University shows that basically most mental illness, similar to the homeless issue, like most mental illness increases your chance of being a victim of crime much more than your chance of being a perpetrator of crime. And then when it comes to gun deaths, so, you know, this is, again, something we're not going to go in depth about. Most, according to the Pew Research Center, most, you know, most gun deaths or suicides or murders, mass shootings are, seem to be a relatively small percentage of gun deaths in the U.S. So, you know, it's still a serious issue, but a lot of the sort of big news breaking shootings are, you know, they're newsworthy, but that's not what most gun deaths are in the U.S. So that kind of wraps things up. I think, you know, it's interesting because when I read, when I kind of did the research on this episode, I was shocked at how straightforward the sort of results were when it came to like, how do you fix crime? It's like, oh, well, you increase the chance of getting caught and you provide more social services. It's a surprisingly simple solution. But it seems like the political will's not there. You know, like how many people campaign on like expanding the type of services I mentioned? You know, doesn't seem like a lot. So I don't know.
No.
But that's it for us.
Oh, please,
for
this please, sir. Very unpopular. One last question. Mm-hmm. Does crime ever pay?
Crime never pays.
There it is.
So that's it for us. Please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.
All right. See ya.